it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to a very special edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 300 of the podcast. I've done 300 episodes of this podcast going back to May of 2015, and I got a very special guest coming up here later on the podcast, ESPN SportsCenter anchor Kevin Negandhi, big Philadelphia sports fan from the Philly area originally. He's been on the podcast before. He's going to talk some Phils with us, and also my good buddy from The Good Fight, Paul Boyer, is going to be joining us to give us some second-half predictions for both the Phillies and for the rest of baseball, and of course, I will have your stat of the week, but I want to start off just before we go any further into this podcast, thanking you, the listener of this podcast. For some of you have been with me from the very beginning, going back to May of 2015, and sticking with me through this long, painful drudgery of a rebuild that we have been on with this baseball team. I can imagine it has not always been easy to listen to a Phillies podcast over the years, especially during the offseason when not much has gone on. I've had a hard time trying to find interesting things to say about this baseball team because of all the losing and the rebuild that we knew had to come. And we now have a baseball team that I think we all believe has a chance to do some special and fun things here in 2019. And so we got through the rebuild together. Many of you have hopped on and become a part of this podcast when Bryce Harper was signed with the Phillies. And so we welcome everyone who just joined us this year as well. But 300 episodes is a lot. It's a long journey going over the span of more than 4 years now. 4 years of my life podcasting about this baseball team, and it has been a lot of fun. It has been a pleasure, and I'm going to keep on rolling until I can't do it anymore. But I just, again, want to thank all of you guys. Some of you guys have been with me from the beginning. For those of you who are Patreon members of Hittin' Season as well, who choose to donate some of your hard-earned money to kind of help me and Justin and Liz do this podcast for The Good Fight every week, and for me two times a week, and for Justin and Liz when they do continued success, and when Justin and Trev do The Dirty Inning. I mean, we all need your support. We need your downloads and your listens, and you guys come through each and every week. And so I thank you for all of the support you guys have given me over these last 4 years, turning this into what I really do believe is one of the better Phillies podcasts out there. When we first started this back in May of 2015, there were no Phillies podcasts. There were none. I think Phillies Nation had a podcast that they did sporadically, but other than MLB.com's Phillies podcast, which, you know, was like once a week, and, you know, they'd have Todd Zielecki over the phone, and it was a good podcast. I listened to it because it was really the only source of getting Phillies information at the time. But I do remember my good buddy John Barchard, now at 94WIP, before he started working at WIP, was working with all of us at SB Nation, with all the different Phillies brands at SB Nation. And at the time, The Good Fight did not have a podcast. And so he suggested to me, knew I worked in radio, and suggested that I do a podcast. And I'd done some podcasts before, but nothing on a regular basis, and nothing where I really had to put my heart and soul into it. And he recommended I start one up, and, you know, we see how it goes. And 4 years later, we are still chugging along and hopefully doing a good job. Hopefully you like this podcast and you like the analysis that we bring you here from a fan's perspective. We were the first here at The Good Fight. We were the first here on Hittin' Season. We used to be called The Felsky Files, of course. I miss that name. I'd love to bring it back, but there were reasons why we let that sunset. And, you know, this podcast, Hittin' Season, has gone 300, and we'll see if we go 300 more. But I just wanted to take a quick moment out to thank all you guys again for all your support and for listening to this podcast. And without any further ado, let's get into talking about here the 2019 Phillies. The first two games of their very big series against the Atlanta Braves are in the books. In the opener, the Phillies and Aaron Nola won 2-0. That was a huge performance from Aaron Nola in that one. It shows that the ace of the staff appears to be back on track. Nolan now with a 0.39 ERA over his last three starts. His earned run average has dropped a full point over his last three starts from 4.89 to 3.89. He has pitched 8, 7, and 8 innings in his last three starts with a 28-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio in 23 innings. And I thought Gabe Kapler showed a lot of faith in Nola by letting him pitch the 8th inning with 100 pitches already. And once again, Nola rewarded his manager for his faith. Not a lot of Phil's pitchers have been rewarding Kapler for some controversial pitching moves. I mean, some of these pitching moves that he has made over these last couple months, they're not as controversial if some of these guys actually do their jobs. And unfortunately, that goes with the territory when you're a big league manager. The players have to execute your plan, and sometimes you make the wrong move and the players bail you out. In this particular instance, I think Kapler made the right move, and it worked out. So process and results both came through for the Phillies in the series opener against the Braves, and that got the Phils to within 4.5 games of the National League East. But then in the second game of the series on Thursday night, just finished up right before I started recording this particular section of the podcast, the Braves beat the Phillies 9-2. Nick Pivetta, man, he comes back from AAA and he looks dominant against the Dodgers, and he looks dominant against a bunch of teams. And ever since those first three starts coming back from AAA, he's looked middling again. He gave up 2 3-run home runs in this game against the Braves. The Phillies now 45-41. It'll be Zach Eflin and the Braves all-star right-hander Mike Soroka going in the series finale. And if the Phillies lose that game, they're back to 6.5 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. And so here's the other thing to think about. The Washington Nationals beat the Florida Marlins, Miami Marlins, on Thursday. The Nationals once trailed the Phillies, I think, by 9 games in the National League East. They are now just half a game behind the Phils in the division. And this is, I mean, look, here's the deal with Nick Pivetta. He has talent. We know it's there. But this guy doesn't fool many people with his fastball right now. This guy's supposed to have an electric fastball. And he can't get it by anybody. He can't get it by anybody. And this is not just the Atlanta Braves. He cannot get it by most hitters. And gave up 2 more big 3-run home runs in this game. He lasted just 5 2/3 innings. The Braves hit 3 home runs in all in this game. Braves hitters have, since turning their 3-game deficit into a 5.5-game lead, have an OPS of 872. I mean, they're red hot. 56 homers. They've gone 20-8. They went 20-8 in the month of June. And so now the lead is back to 5.5 games. The Phillies' offense didn't do anything. At some point, you run out of patience with Pivetta. At some point, you just have to say, enough's enough. The Phillies don't have anybody else right now. They have to keep running him out there. And he was hurt by some bad defense. Rhys Hoskins had a throwing error that came right before Josh Donaldson's 3-run home run in the 4th inning that made it 3-0 Braves. Hoskins hit a runner trying to throw to second base and try and get a force out. It probably could have been a double play. But regardless, everybody was safe, and then Donaldson hit his 3-run blast. And then the Phillies got it to 3-2. They scratched out a couple runs. Against Braves rookie starter Bryce Wilson, making just his 4th big league start, 21 years old, the youngest player to start a game in the National League this season, another young starter for the Atlanta Braves. Nick Pivetta gave up a 1-out hit to Freddie Freeman and then walked Donaldson and gave up a 3-run home run to rookie Austin Riley. See, the Braves are getting huge contributions from rookies, young players. And then Juan Nicasio comes in, and Juan Nicasio does what Juan Nicasio does, and he throws kerosene on a dwindling fire, and he gave up another couple of runs in this game, and he's given up 6 runs in just 2/3 of an inning over his last 2 outings. Pivetta, and this is from Jim Salisbury's Gamer, Pivetta gave up just 4 runs in his first 3 starts back from AAA, and has been tagged for 20 runs in his last 4 starts, and they are absolutely eating his fastballs alive. Donaldson and Riley both hit breaking balls for their 3-run homers because they're not afraid of his fastball. So unless they go out and get some help in the trade market, we're stuck with Nick Pivetta. And we're stuck looking at a Phillies team that, at this moment, I don't think they're making the playoffs. It does not feel in my heart like this team is going to the playoffs. Does it to you? Does it feel to you like this is a playoff team? What we've watched this season? Does this feel like a playoff team? I'm not sure what they can do at the trade deadline to fix all of these different things. They're relying on a starting rotation that just has too many question marks. Nick Pivetta is a huge question mark. And he's more likely to give you a bad outing than a good outing most nights. Jake Arrieta is probably the same thing. Now, hopefully Aaron Nola is going to return to being the ace that we were hoping he was going to be this year. He looks dialed in again. So at least the Phillies appear to have their ace back. But they don't have a number two starter. Zach Eflin has not pitched great over the last four or five starts and is probably pitching more like a number three or a number four starter. Arrieta is definitely pitching more like a number four starter. Nick Pivetta is pitching like a number five, and Velasquez is pitching like a guy who should be pitching in AAA. This starting rotation's not good enough, and maybe one guy can fix it, and one really good pitcher can fix it, but again, we've talked about this on the podcast before. I don't think the Phillies have the ammunition to go get a guy like that, unless you're going to buy Zach Greinke and just pay that contract, give up a middling prospect, and put Zach Greinke into that rotation. Now maybe you're talking, and that still would be the target for me. The Phillies have to make some moves if they want to be in the playoffs, because the Braves have more good young talent than the Phillies do. It's clear. The Phillies have Rhys Hoskins and Scott Kingery and Aaron Nola. The Braves have a lot more. And here come the Nationals. We made fun of the Washington Nationals ad nauseum over the first couple months of the season. Now here they come. They're playing like the team we thought they would be early in the season. They are coming for second place. It is highly possible the Phillies roll into the All-Star break in third place in this division. Bryce Harper hasn't gotten hot. JT Realmuto hasn't gotten hot. Rhys Hoskins has played well, consistently, but hasn't gotten hot. There are a lot of... And the bullpen? Still, I mean, getting David Robertson, a healthy and effective David Robertson back, would be like making a midseason acquisition. It absolutely would. But this team does not feel like a playoff team right now. I can't say with any confidence that this is a playoff team. At the moment, I think it's a safer bet to say the Phillies are not going to the playoffs. Look at how they've played. Look at their play on the field. I know they hold the second, as I'm recording this, they hold the second wild card because the National League has a lot of teams all bunched together. The Cubs and the Phillies are tied at 45 and 41. For those two wild card spots. The Rockies and the Nationals are both just a half a game back. And then you got three teams, 2.5 games back. It's a jumbled mess for the wild card. The Phillies are going to be in the wild card hunt all season. I just don't think they have the horses right now. What have we seen over these last couple months to make anyone think that this is a playoff team? So that's the unfortunate reality as we finish up this series against the Braves. And if they win the series finale against Atlanta and they get back to within 4.5 games, you know, you can feel good about that. I'll feel good about that. They'll have won a series against the Braves. That's great. And they'll finish up with a series in New York against the Mets. Maybe they finish up the week strong and they go into the All-Star break with a head of steam. Right now, as we speak, and I'm not, you know, listen, this is my opinion here as we're recording this on Wednesday, July 3rd at 10:30 at night. Okay? Things could be different in 4 or 5 days. But as I sit here right now, this does not feel like a playoff team. I wish I had better news for you on episode 300. I wish we were talking about a team that was still in first place. But this is a team that just can't seem to get any kind of winning streak going, can't get their feet underneath them, get any kind of momentum going, because it's all in the starting pitching. Momentum is that day's starting pitcher. And sometimes momentum is that day's lackluster offense. So that is what faces the Phillies here after the first two games of their series against the Atlanta Braves. And for the rest of the podcast, we're going to be talking to some very special guests here for episode 300. Up next, ESPN SportsCenter anchor and Philly native Kevin Negandhi joins the program to talk some Phil's baseball. We'll do that next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk about the Phillies, just as we've passed the halfway point of the season here on episode number 300, is Kevin Negandhi, ESPN SportsCenter anchor, Philly native, big Philly sports fan. You can follow him on Twitter. You probably already do, at KNegandhi ESPN. Kevin, thanks so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you?
John, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, and congratulations on your 300th podcast. Great to be a part of it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, man. Yeah, we started in May of 2015, so I've been doing this during the real strong era here for Phillies baseball. It's been a challenging 4 years, I'll say that, but it's been fun, and yeah, hopefully, you know, as we watch the second half here, Kevin, we're going to see a team that actually is able to stay in postseason contention, unlike last year when they faltered so badly. And, you know, June was not a very good month for this team. They've fallen back behind the Atlanta Braves now in the NL East, but now that we're officially past the halfway point of the season, about a week away from the All-Star game, the Phillies are in second. They're currently holding down a wild card spot as we're recording this. They're a few games off the pace of the Atlanta Braves. How do you think the first half of the season has gone so far for the Phillies? Has it been disappointing, frustrating, about what you expected?
Definitely not what I expected. A mixed bag, and disappointing and frustrating, probably a good way to describe it. When you lose five of your last six games against the Marlins, you sit there and you wonder, and now we wake up at they're 4.5 games back at the Braves, the taping of this podcast. The one good thing this morning while we're talking is what we saw from Aaron Nola. What we've seen from Aaron Nola, in his last three starts, just giving up one earned run in 23 innings. He was fantastic last night. He was the ace. He had vintage Cole Hamels, you know, during that run in 2008. They need that Aaron Nola the entire summer. For him to get that extra start before the All-Star break will be critical as well. The most frustrating part with this team is, you know, how we've seen the bullpen managed, and I know a lot of people have brought up the injuries. They've been hit really hard with injuries, and the Robertson stuff really, really hurts them in that first half. But you know, when you have 5-run leads and you're up by 2 or 3 runs against the Marlins, you shouldn't be coughing the game up.
Yeah.
When you look at their lineup and what they bring, and so that's the frustrating part. They should be winning some of these games, the games that, you know. Listen, the Mets were very therapeutic, but let's not forget, thankfully, the Mets have a bullpen that is 10 times worse than the Philly situation, and that allowed them to come back in each of those games in that last series. So the frustrating part for me is, you know, when McCutchen went down, it seems like the juice in this offense suddenly, you know, all the air in the balloon went out, and I love Andrew McCutchen. I think he's fantastic, and I knew it was going to be a costly hit to the lineup, but it shouldn't have been that drastic. They have too many good hitters, and we haven't seen a stretch where 3 or 4 of them are all on the same page. We've seen guys that have gotten hot, dramatically cooled down like Franco. We've had glimpses of Bryce. The one thing that I love about Bryce and is his intensity and the way he's aggressive, maybe overly aggressive, but I won't count that short when we've seen Segura struggle a little bit coming out of the box, as well as Cesar Hernandez. Those guys have to have the same intensity night in and night out. Now, Segura and Hernandez have been very good additions.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I think Segura at the beginning of the season was to me the difference in this lineup. I just want to see more consistency. I think everybody's been screaming that. And we need to see consistency on the back end of the rotation as Kapler's been trying to figure things out.
What's been the bigger loss this year? You mentioned David Robertson a second ago, and we've all talked about how big a loss Andrew McCutchen was because we saw how good he was when he was in there, probably the best leadoff hitter in the National League for the time that he was in the lineup. And removing him from the lineup, the Phillies had a really hard time until Scott Kingery went to the leadoff spot, really having a hard time replacing that production. But the guy we don't talk a lot about is David Robertson, because he was the big bullpen addition, and they needed a big bullpen addition this offseason. He was the guy who was supposed to either be your link to Hector Neris or whoever the closer was going to be, or the closer himself. And you, like you said, we've seen so many issues with the bullpen, lots of injuries. Some of the guys that they've brought back off the injured list, seems like they may have brought him back a little bit too quickly, Adam Morgan specifically. But with David Robertson not being that anchor in the back of the bullpen, I wonder if he hasn't been the fact that he's been missing from this team, whether that hasn't been a bigger issue for the Phillies than Andrew McCutchen. What do you think? Bigger loss injury-wise, McCutchen or Robertson?
Robertson, because, you know, all the things you just brought up. Listen, I love Andrew, and I mentioned that before. I think Andrew at the top of the lineup provides stability. I think when you look at bringing in a guy like McCutchen and Robertson, what do they have in common? They know how to play in big moments. They are veterans, and they never panic. And when you lose two of those guys, especially when you're struggling, it's a domino effect. And, you know, I think a huge issue last year, we saw in Arrieta, aired it out a little bit, was there's some immaturity and focus coming into the ballpark and staying focused on why they're playing baseball, and, you know, not playing anything else in the clubhouse. And those guys bring that stability inside the in the clubhouse. And when you don't have Robertson on the back end, you have a lot of young arms. Robertson gives you, hey, no matter what, we know what we're going to get night in and night out. And you don't have that stability there. It was a huge loss. And they paid for it, I think, in many situations when you're blowing leads in the seventh and eighth inning, or what we saw with Neris. And Neris has been good, but like, it's a roller coaster. He was fantastic last night.
That was great.
I mean, fantastic.
But it was unexpected. It seemed weird. Had Neris blown him down 1-2-3. We haven't seen that much from him.
No, we have not. Yeah. I mean, I made a joke about it. I've joked about it a couple times on Twitter all season long with the bullpen. Where's the Tums? And it's the truth.
Yeah.
My stomach was in knots last night because you're debating, hey, does Nola come out in the eighth inning? He's thrown a ton of pitches. But, I mean, Gappler talked about it. He was the best option.
Yeah, he was.
And I think if you're in a situation like that where you have Robertson healthy, I think Robertson would pitch that eighth inning.
Yeah.
And then you get Daenerys. So I think that there's a domino effect that we've seen. Why I can't wait to see what this team looks like probably in August.
Mm-hmm.
We're just you know, surviving. I go back to, you know, you're going to lose a couple games against the quality teams like the Dodgers. You're going to struggle sometimes against the Brewers and the Cubs. It's okay. And the Braves, you just bring your best in what you can do. But you got to beat the teams like the Marlins. You can't go 1-5 against them in the last six meetings. Those are the games you have to go 5-1 or 6-0 because you have to keep pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Atlanta Braves are beating the Marlins at that pace, so you have to match what the Braves are doing against the worst team in the division too. So, no, that's for sure. Maybe more frustrating than losing those series to the Braves and the Nationals was losing series to the Marlins, getting swept and then losing 2 out of 3. But they got off to a good start against Atlanta on Tuesday night, and you know, as you just said a minute ago, we're talking about what this team could look like in August. We are now in the month of July. This is trading season here. This is when Matt Klentak is going to look to try and beef up the team. I do think that what we've seen from Aaron Nola these last three starts, it looks like maybe they've got their ace back. And so maybe that acts as going out and getting a top of the rotation starter, although you could argue maybe they still need another one of those guys. But they also, you know, they expect to get David Robertson back at the end of July. So maybe that's the impact reliever that you need to trade for. And hopefully Tommy Hunter continues to pitch the way he has his first couple outings after coming off the injured list. But as you think about Nola's turning it around and David Robertson maybe coming back, and you look at what Matt Klentak has in the farm system, what can he do at the trade deadline to fix this team? And what are the most important things that you think he needs to fix?
I still think they need to get somebody else in the rotation. I mean, we've had glimpses from Pivetta where you're like, oh, did he turn the corner, right? And then what you see the last three starts where he's given up, you know, he can't. I mean, his last two starts, he can't get it out of the sixth inning, you know, and he gives up 4 runs and then 6 runs. So I think Pivetta teases you a little bit where we had that run. You know, you looked fantastic against the Dodgers at one point in early June, and then he has that performance against the Reds, and you're like, oh, gosh, okay, we've got something again. We've got a steady guy there potentially in that rotation. In the middle part, Velasquez, I don't know what's going on with him. I don't think they know what's going on.
He's
washed.
They
try to figure out a role, right?
Yeah.
And you know the talent that he has. The startling thing, I mean, Eflin has his moments. This whole team, though, overall, they just give up the long ball way too easy. And you see what Eflin did in that start against the Mets a couple weeks ago. He's given up 3 home runs. You know, like, well, what's going on? So I think that's the most frustrating part. I still think they need another quality arm. And that's where you start to think, could they have gotten Keuchel without giving anything up? You know, and yeah. that's when you start to play the games in your head that, okay, Keuchel, Kimbrel, if you're going to spend the money like you did this offseason, you got to go all in. You can't go halfway. You can't go, oh, maybe, you know, because what the way this team is, the way this team is built, the windows are small. And I think many teams will tell you, like, if you feel like you can make a run, go all in and make the run. Yeah. And the Sixers are showing that right now as an example. Mm-hmm. I think the Eagles are showing that right now as an example. You can't just say, I'm going to spend $330 million on Bryce. We're going to bring in JT. We're going to make some trades and then go with Robertson, bring in McCutcheon. And then we're going to just say, you know, we're missing a piece and then we can't go after it.
You know,
you've got to go after it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Once they traded Sixto Sanchez this offseason, it was all and for JT Realmuto, a guy that was only under contract for 2 years, it was all about 2019 and 2020. I agree 100%. It seems to me the Phillies just didn't like Keuchel. I mean, yeah. I think they're into going for it here. They know they need to make the playoffs. I just think the bottom line is I don't think they thought Keuchel would help them all that much. And, you know, if you're looking for a number one or a number two, no, Keuchel's probably not that guy. But right now I would settle for a solid, reliable number four starter so that the fifth spot in the rotation isn't the black hole that it is right now.
So, but you brought it up. So if Keuchel's not potentially a number two, which I think I'm on the same page with you, and he's not maybe the three. Man, how good would he look as the number four?
Right, right.
To round out that rotation where you say, okay, we're going to shorten things up because we got to win if we get in the playoffs. Like, Keuchel would bring you that. Now, I get what you're saying, that they weren't a big fan of it, but if the goal is this window within 2 years, you go after. I mean, Jay Bruce doesn't get that double. Keuchel's, I mean, he pitched a gem.
Yeah.
Last night was a preview where it felt like Keuchel was like, see, I told you, you should have thought about me, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they hit him hard early. They barreled up a lot of balls early, and then he kind of settled in. But in the first three innings, I was watching on game day, and I saw lined out. I was like, oh, man, he seems to be getting a little bit of good fortune there. But the other thing he is, Kevin, he's a lefty, which is something this rotation desperately needs.
Desperately needs.
Yeah.
when you look at them, they desperately need to mix it up every now and then. And listen, Arrieta, I think we all know what Arrieta is.
Yeah.
He's going to give you innings, and potentially you got to score more than four runs. That's the key for this Phillies team. You score more than four runs, okay, now we're talking. I think you could say that for a lot of teams around baseball. But for this one, the way they identify – If Noah's going to be the number one ace that we all expect, that we've seen now in his last three starts, who's the guy that's going to make sure that the next three starts are going to be okay in between?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if we've had any consistency to figure that out, to say we're comfortable with Pivetta, we're comfortable with Arrieta, we're comfortable with Eflin to be that guy. Keuchel, we know what we're going to get. To me, he would have been a perfect number three, potentially four. You hold your breath when you start throwing guys out there and you're like, we have no idea what we're going to get. And that's what I feel like every time Velasquez goes on the mound. And this is not to crush one guy, but you could say the same thing with Pivetta in certain starts. You can make the case with Arrieta sometimes where you're like, okay, they gave him a lead. Can he hold on to it without giving up the long ball?
Yeah, and the long ball has killed them both offensively and defensively this year. In a year when they're going to shatter the home run record in Major League Baseball, the Phillies are still down near the bottom of teams hitting the long ball this season. And a lot of that is because Bryce Harper hasn't given them the power production, and JT Realmuto hasn't given them the power production this offseason. And you know, I think Harper is on pace for around 30 home runs, but he's got a lot of doubles, but you're hoping for more home run power, especially in a season when so many guys are hitting the ball out of the park. Realmuto's power drop is, I thought he was going to be a potential 25 home run guy, 30 home run guy playing in Citizens Bank Park and getting out of Marlins Park, which is usually a terrible park for home run hitters. And I don't know, what have you seen from Harper and Realmuto so far this season that explains their power drop? It's really, you know, it's really been surprising to me.
The one concern I've had with Harper has been how he handles fastballs.
Yeah.
When you look at, you know, that 2015 MVP season to where he's been since then, he is really strong against fastballs. And therefore, you see that average below 250. That really has been the concern all season long. Now, Realmuto, 10 home runs from the catcher's spot, projected around, 18, 19 home runs. I'm okay with that. I feel like the guy gives us a lot of other things, that, especially in that catching spot, that I'm okay with. Kingery has been a pleasant surprise.
Oh, big surprise.
The power. Jay Bruce, I felt like the move was really, really sharp doing that, just because you need some pop in the lineup. To me, you know, I'm the one that's holding out hope that I'm like, okay, maybe there's some adjustments that need to be made. He's getting on base when you look at the walks. You see the OPS at 829. I'm holding out hope. I'm concerned that he has already gotten over 100 strikeouts. You mentioned the doubles, so there is pop there. To me, Reese is doing his job. The average has gone down dramatically recently. I'd like to see more, you know, him raise that up a little bit. But to me, Franco started off hot. We don't see that bat now all of a sudden in the back end of the lineup. Kingery's picked it up a little bit. For me, patience is the key for Bryce, and this hope that, okay, he's still getting adjusted. The guy didn't have his spring training. Now I understand it's July. So my thinking is that ballpark, it gets hotter, the ball flies out quicker. Things have to change with the heart of that lineup as they try to figure out, you know, and Gabe's tinkered a little bit because of the McCutcheon thing. Now there's no excuses in the second half.
Yeah.
You get your legs underneath you and let's figure this out in July and August. I would be concerned if Bryce is, you know, if we're like in mid-August and he's still sputtering, then I would say, all right, what are we looking long-term, not just this season? What are we actually getting?
And somebody explained this to me. Paul Boyer, who's one of our Good Fight writers, was relaying a conversation that he had with his father, who talked about the fact, and I don't think we think about this very often with free agents. Bryce Harper made like a life-changing career decision this offseason, moving from Washington to Philadelphia and basically establishing himself as a guy who's going to be in Philadelphia for 13 years, at the same time finding out that his wife was pregnant and he was going to be a father and going through all of these life changes. I wonder how much of that we don't think about when a free agent comes and moves his life from one place to another and then struggles in that first season. I wonder, I mean, we expect these guys to kind of be automatons and robots and, you know, like you would play in a video game. You move them from one team to the other, the production's going to be almost exactly the same. But, you know, Manny Machado is struggling his first season in San Diego as well. Both these guys are not on the All-Star team this year after an offseason where that's all we talked about. What do you think? Do you think that any of this off-the-field stuff, should that factor in? Should we be making that part of the calculus?
Yeah, I do. I feel like it works twofold. It's us becoming aware that these guys are not just, you know, what are they flashing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's us taking a step back instead of looking at a box score and then just coming to some conclusion. But I also think this falls on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado because when they signed. Now,
yeah,
they're thinking of the long-term, getting the money they want long-term for the next 13 years or 10 years or whatever it may be. But when you sign so late in the offseason, I mean, let's go back to the old days, you know, the days when we were used to guys signing.
Yeah.
They would sign in December. They would sign in January, and they would have those 2 months to get adjusted, to kind of get settled, to be aware of what they're doing and where they're going. But those days are gone. They dictated it. It falls on their lap because they were in control. But at the same time, it's a factor.
Yep.
Now, it's a factor for potentially the first 3 to 4 months, right?
Yeah.
You throw that out the door, I think, when you get to July and August. You throw that out the door next year, right?
Because, oh, yeah,
then you have everything gets underneath you and you get settled. But I think it's way too early to shape any type of narrative of who they are and what they're going to be in this long-term contract. But right now, patience is probably the best way to approach the first half of the season. Then we start to talk about, all right, mid-July, you come out of the break. You've had that break. Where are we now? The expectations, they get raised to another level.
Kevin, last question for you here. Putting your crystal ball in front of you and looking at the second half of the season as this plays out here over July, August, and September, do the Phillies make the playoffs? And if so, do they win the division or do they get one of the wild cards?
Man, this is a really good question. Because you look at the Dodgers are doing their thing. And let's just say, let's knock out the Dodgers, the Brewers, and the Braves, right? Then you start to see, where is that battle between the Phillies, the Nationals, Cubs, Cardinals, and the Rockies? And you could throw in the Pirates.
And the Padres, and too. Yeah, they're in the,
Padres,
they're in the mix as well.
The Diamondbacks, because that West is all jammed up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you start to say, how did this team, to me, getting into the playoffs is all that matters when you look at this year one and what they're trying to do. I would have had expectations to win the division, but I think a lot of people slept on the Braves.
Yep.
I think a lot of people weren't counting on the Braves in the sense of, oh, the big splash, but man, that team is loaded for the next 5 to 8 years when you look at the young talent that's coming through that system.
To me, I think they make the playoffs if we get the Aaron Nola that we've seen the last 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think they make the playoffs, and it'll be a phenomenal battle. The Cubs are sputtering. People are really not pleased with what we're seeing with them. So we'll have the Brewers win that division. We know the Dodgers are going to win the West the way that's being played out.
Yeah.
So how do they match up against the Nationals? How do they match up against the Rockies and the Diamondbacks and the Padres? And I like the Phillies' chances when you look at those teams. But it comes back to what we started this conversation. You have to beat the teams that you're supposed to beat, like the Miami Marlins. You know, you handle your business against the Mets, but you got to beat the teams like the Reds. And face-to-face, you have to handle a team like the Diamondbacks where, you know, a month ago or a couple months ago where the Diamondbacks came in and they did whatever they wanted offensively. And you're like, whoa, what are we doing? So I go back to that. I think the Phillies, I don't expect an August swoon like we saw last year because we went through that this June.
Get it out of the way early,
swoon, I think then you got to start pointing the arrow at what's going on with the manager.
Well, we'll see how that shakes out then here over the second half, because I agree with you. Another swoon like that later in the year, that does spell some bad things for Gabe Kapler. But hopefully the Phillies are able to take one of those two wild card spots. And, hey, maybe the Braves come back to the pack a little bit here in the second half as well. Folks, if you're not watching the 6 o'clock Eastern Time Sports Center with Kevin Negandhi, I don't know what you're doing with your lives. But make sure that you at least follow him on Twitter at KNegandhiESPN. Kevin, thank you so much for coming back on Hittin' Season. I really appreciate it.
John, my pleasure. Thank you.
And up next, my good buddy from The Good Fight, Paul Boyer, is going to join me to talk some Phils, and we'll do some predictions for second half award winners and who we think will make the postseason. I'll lay out my thoughts, my pessimistic thoughts on the Phils' postseason chances. That's up next right here on Hittin' Season. Well, on the 300th episode here of Hittin' Season, I wanted to have back one of my colleagues from The Good Fight, who's good enough to join me like once a month, I think, is pretty much how we have this kind of mapped out at this point, because I value his insights on the Phillies tremendously. He always brings the goods when he comes on the podcast, and he's a terrific writer for us here at The Good Fight. He also handles The Good Fight Twitter feed. Paul Boyer, you're probably already following him on Twitter. It's at @Paul_Boyer, and of course, you also read everything that's going on in his mind at The Good Fight Twitter feed. Paul, welcome back to Hittin' Season. How are you, pal?
Big number 300. Johnny, this is an honor, man. And congratulations to you. This is a big milestone here. You know, that not many people can say they ever hit 300 home runs or 300 doubles or maybe even got 300 hits or RBI. And yet here we are, big old number 300 on the podcast episode. That's incredible, man.
Thank you, pal. Yeah, most people are smart enough to stop before they get to 300. So, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, yeah, I started this in May of 2015. My good buddy John Barchard, who works at 94WIP now, was working with the SB Nation Philly podcast at the time and suggested I do a Phillies podcast. And really, in May of 2015, there were no Phillies podcasts. I mean, there were none out there. So There's a lot of them out there now, and there's room for everybody, and they're all good. So I'm sure many of the Hit and Season and the Good Fight listeners are listening to those other podcasts too, and I encourage that because everybody does great work. But yeah, we've been around for a good long time, and Paul, I'm really hoping here as the second half gets underway that we're not going to see another season where the Phillies missed the playoffs, because that's all I've known doing this podcast so far is missed playoff seasons, rebuilding seasons. And I think you and I both think that better times are ahead for this team in the second half. What do you think about the first half so far?
You know, honestly, I think a lot of us are getting to the point where all we can remember are Phillies teams that missed the playoffs. We're all getting to the point where we've shed an entire decade, and all we know is like, maybe next year. This year, I think we could change that, but there's still some work to be done. It's pretty clearly evident that this is the most talented Phillies team we've seen in a long time. It's on the field. The numbers may be kind of average in some places. You know, the performance is maybe even substandard, and I'm sure, you know, some of the players would tell you they're not playing up to what they think they can play like. But as far as just looking at talent on the field, and you see it in flashes, that there is more talent on this team than some of the other teams from the last 5, 6, 7 years put together. You could take the all-star teams from the rebuilding years, and you wouldn't come close to the talent that's on the field now. So the promise is there. And I think they got to keep working toward it. They got to keep playing well. They got to keep winning these series against the Braves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe get a little bit of help later this month. We'll see.
Yeah, and it would be great if they can go into the All-Star break, having cut that lead down to about 4 to 4.5, 3.5. Maybe, you know, heaven forbid they sweep the Braves here and they get it to 2.5. We're recording this during game 2 of the series, so we don't know exactly how things are going to shake out here for the rest of this Atlanta series. But game 1 was, I think, really important, Paul, because as we look at what this team needs to add at the trade deadline, I think everybody acknowledges the fact they need to add a starter. And I think that the big question is, what kind of starter and what are you willing to give up to get that particular starting pitcher? Which is, I would like to see a left-hander come to this team, which is why Matt Boyd is really intriguing, which is why, you know, somebody, you know, a guy like if the Rangers were selling Mike Minor would be interesting, but they're not going to be selling. But Robbie Ray of the Diamondback, those kinds of guys are interesting. But, you know, you'd have to give up one of the few good prospects that you have in this farm system right now. And that's why my target is, I think, Zach Greinke at this point, because I think you can get him for a minimal prospect cost simply because you're taking on salary. That's where you're really feeling the pain with a Zach Greinke trade. And that's kind of my target here for the second half. But also, you know, one of the things that has been great over the last few starts is Aaron Nola reemerging as the ace of the staff. So maybe you don't need a guy like Greinke.
I think they still need some help. You know, you hit the nail on the head that there's a pretty clear gap on this team. They've had a lot of options come through. They've thrown a lot of guys at the wall to see if anybody could stick. Some of them have shown flashes. It's a lot of what we've seen over the last couple of years when we were more tolerant of letting these guys develop and hoping that better things would come from it. Now that we're firmly in a contending year, we're a little less tolerant of that.
Yeah.
But I think you're onto something when talking about Zach Greinke, right? Because any move that this team makes, I think, personally, has to be looking toward 2020 as well as 2019.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot of players in this farm system, and they can get just about anybody who's available. I think if they really wanted to go all in and just deplete their resources, they could get anyone who hit the trading block. But I think a lot will depend on how this team performs over the next couple of weeks. I think they're going to make a move regardless. I really do. I think there's an area of need, and there's going to be resources, I guess, to put it bluntly, available for this team to look at and pick up. But they're going to need to look forward toward 2020 and possibly beyond, because any rentals, you know, doing the thing like they did last year with Asdrubal Cabrera and Wilson Ramos and all that really low cost rental guys, that's not going to work for this team, I don't think, because they're not going to be in that position. It might keep them afloat in the wild card race. I don't think they're interested in that. I think this is a team that wants to build something and is more interested in having some sort of core, even if it's only for 2 or 3 years at a time, around the likes of Harper and Hoskins to keep some consistency in there. And so if you think about rentals, you know, you can think about Cole Hamels if he's available. You can think about Madison Bumgarner. You can think about the rentals, but I don't think it makes sense right now. You know, that could change. Maybe they're in a better position by this time, you know, closer toward the end of the month. And if a good rental is still available through trade, yeah, well, maybe circumstances are different. You think about it. To me, this feels like a deadline where you're playing as much for 2020's roster as you are 2019's.
No, I think that's fair, and especially because JT Realmuto is only signed through next year, and you know, who knows if they're going to – I think they're going to try and extend him, but it hasn't happened yet, and so until it actually happens, you don't know that you have Realmuto for after the 2020 season. And with the roster the Atlanta Braves have, they look like a team that is going to be around for a really long time. Two All-Stars, the first team in Major League history to have two – the first National League team, I think it is, to have two All-Stars age 21 or younger in the same season, with Acuna and Soroka both going to the All-Star game. And that doesn't even factor in Freddie Freeman. That doesn't factor in slugging third baseman Austin Riley that they have, Ozzie Albies, and Nick Markakis just keeps finding the fountain of youth. I mean, would you trade 25-man rosters with the Atlanta Braves right now? Because I would.
Yeah, I think you have a hard time saying no to that. You know, the offense is incredible. And even though there are pitching concerns, I think there's enough talent in those arms. You look at Soroka, you look at Max Fried,
yeah.
You look at Bryce Wilson, who's starting tonight's game for the Braves, and you see the promise there, and they're all still so young and apparently at least fringe major league quality at 20, 21, 22 years old. The Phillies are not pumping guys out that young at quite that rate. I'll put it that way.
No.
You probably swap 25-man rosters. There's a lot of talent on both sides of that debate. But I think the Braves are just a really talented team, as much as it pains me to say.
You know, what's interesting is that Atlanta has – you know, the prospects that the Phillies have churned out, guys like Kingery and Hoskins, and if Alec Baum continues his development, a guy like Alec Baum, they're all college players. So they're getting to the majors at 24, 25, you know, and whereas, you know, the Braves seem to have churned out these international signings and some of these really young players at 19 and 20 and 21 years old. And that just gives you, you know, now if you still have to go through the same amount of service time. And so the Braves just might lose these guys when they're, you know, earlier into their primes or whatever. But the fact remains, you could potentially, if you're Atlanta, have these guys for 10 or 12 years, you know, starting now, taking you all through their prime. It is a big advantage that they do have. But the Phillies have the power of the purse, is something that the Braves don't have right now too. So what do you think? I mean, well, we're going to get to predictions here in just a second, but I was going to jump the gun a little bit. Well, we'll hold off on that. So who's the more important player? Who do you think is the most important, the biggest loss that the Phillies suffered this year? When you're looking at losing Andrew McCutchen and David Robertson at the start of the season, we know that the impact McCutchen had and now what it's like without him. With Robertson, he didn't really even get a chance to pitch for the Phillies this year. But, you know, kind of looking at Robertson also coming back as a midseason acquisition, I'm curious what your thought is as to who is the bigger loss this year when they went down with injuries.
Well, I think you can look to a number of guys on the pitching side and say that, wow, at points, this team is missing an entire bullpen on the injured list. And that's hard to overcome. I think one of the biggest losses, and we're only still really kind of feeling these effects right now, is the Andrew McCutchen loss. That's only just started. This guy was establishing himself as one of the best leadoff hitters in the National League, if not all of Major League Baseball this year, drawing a ton of walks, getting on base, hitting for some power, being a spark in the clubhouse, which he still can be, even though he's hurt.
Sure.
Losing his production on the field right now kind of stings, even though Scott Kingery has taken to the leadoff role nicely for the moment. Having McCutchen come back on his rebuilt leg next year is going to be, it's going to be interesting. I hope he's fine. These leg injuries can be tricky and everybody responds differently. I'm sure he's got the work ethic to power right through, and this rehab is going to be, it's going to be hard, but I'm sure he's going to fight right on through it. But losing him for the rest of this year, everything he had brought to the table through the first 2 months of the year, it really stings, and it's only just starting to sting. I hope Scott Kingery can keep filling in his shoes as admirably as he has, or whoever steps into the leadoff role. But it's pretty clear that losing him has thrown their plans into a bit of disarray.
All right, well, let's get into some end-of-year predictions here. Mid-season, Paul, good time to take a guess as to who we think are going to be the MVP, Cy Young, and Rookie of the Year predictions, and we'll give our second-half predictions on division winners, playoff teams, all that kind of stuff. Let's start in the National League, and let's start with the MVP. Paul, who do you have as the MVP of the National League thus far?
MVP of the National League thus far? Well, it's a two-horse race right now, right at this moment, between Bellinger and Yelich, because these two guys are playing on another level right now. Even though Bellinger's cooled off a little bit, he's still having a crazy year. And really, everything underlying his numbers looks like it supports these crazy numbers. It's insane. You know, you look at somebody who's breaking out like this, who's hitting 390 through the first 2 months of the year or whatever it was, and you're like, wow, that's not real. That's
no, can't sustain that.
Off. Yeah, no, there's no chance he's going to hang on to that. Well, no, he's not still hitting 390, but, you know, newsflash to the world, he's still hitting 344 with a 700 slugging percentage. Like, that's no
Those
joke.
Are good.
Yeah, that's not a mirage through 80-plus games. This is a guy who has a ridiculously pretty swing when he connects, just to add a little bit of aesthetic flourish to the whole thing. And the fact that he's now able to make such great contact, to walk more than he strikes out, and to keep hitting with all of this power. Look, Yelich has the lead in home runs right now, but for my money, Cody Bellinger he's putting himself on an early track to being talked about as one of like the three best players in the game. He's exploded. It's amazing. Yeah. It's been amazing to watch.
Yeah, people didn't think he'd be able to hit with this kind of contact, but right now he's 5.5 wins above replacement, just ahead of Mike Trout, and I think it is close between him and Yelich, but I've got it going Bellinger as well. For Cy Young, it's kind of a two-horse race here, too, I think, between Max Scherzer and Hyunjin Ryu. Ryu is an ERA under 2 at this point. I mean, Ryu is at 2.10. No, is that right? No, I'm sorry. Scherzer has a 2.10 ERA. Ryu is under 2 at the moment. I mean, having an ERA under 2 with the way baseballs are flying out of the park right now would almost in any other season assure you the Cy Young. But Max Scherzer, to me, I think has just a little bit of an edge, and I got to give it to Mad Max. When you break your eye with a foul ball and then come back the next night and strike out 40 guys, that gives you the lead in the clubhouse for me. So I'm going Max Scherzer. How about you?
Yeah, he's gritty, man. I know that's a word that kind of took on a bit of a pejorative, I think, over a few years ago. But he is everything you want in a guy you just want to hand the ball to and be like, go out and do work. And the amazing thing about this guy is that he keeps creeping into his mid-30s, and his strikeout rates keep going up. They keep
going up. Yes,
I know
they do.
Part of that is due to the hitters, right? Like the environment, okay, it lends itself towards strikeout. I get it. The fact that this dude with his wickedly creative motion that had so many of us thinking, oh, he's going to be injured for sure. He's never going to be able to stay on the field for 30 starts a year, year after year. Not only is he doing that, he's doing that and getting better and striking more guys out and allowing fewer home runs in the midst of this home run explosion. He's incredible. He retires tomorrow and he's a Hall of Famer, first of all.
Yep.
And who knows what else he could do as he keeps getting into his mid-30s. Like, if he's still on an improvement track, what else can he do?
Right.
I know we're only talking about this year, but that's a really long way of saying I agree with you. And I would give it to him for the first half.
And National League Rookie of the Year, is there any debate that it's Pete Alonso at this point, 28 home runs at the halfway point of the season?
That's one strong boy. I'll tell you what, that's a terrifying at-bat. I remember in these Mets series thinking every time this dude comes to the plate that trouble is brewing. You look at him come to the plate, he swings so hard. It's sort of like Bellinger from the right side, not at all in the form, but in the fact that they have so much strength behind their swings. He is a really, really scary at bat, and he'll work an at bat too. You know, he's getting on base. He's not doing the Rob Deer thing. You know, he's hitting for power, but he's working counts and he's hitting doubles. He's just getting on. He's even got a stolen base just you know, for good measure. He's it right now.
Nice Rob Deer pull, by the way. That was well done. That was well done. American League MVP. You know, it always seems that Trout gets off to a little bit of a slow start, and then come like late May, early June, he just puts it into overdrive and takes the league by storm. So is it Mike Trout for you as well in the American League?
Yeah, not even close.
American League Cy Young. This is a really interesting race too. There's a lot of different guys who could be vying for this. I'm leaning towards Charlie Morton right now, a guy I think the Phillies should have absolutely signed this offseason. An AL best 2.36 ERA, 11.1 strikeouts per nine, opponents hitting 580 against him. It's a 580 OPS, by the way. There's some other candidates there, but for my, I got Morton with the slight lead in the clubhouse at the moment.
Yeah, losing out on Charlie Morton hurts, although I still think we should give the Phillies the credit for discovering that Charlie Morton was reborn when they picked him up for a song, basically, and he ended up tearing his ACL early in the year. I think the Phillies were onto this. They were on the ground floor, man. They need to get the credit for this.
Absolutely.
Apart from that, I like Charlie Morton's old teammate, Gerrit Cole. I think Gerrit Cole's had the better first half. He doesn't quite have the ERA, but he's blown dudes away. He's got 160 strikeouts in less than 110 innings. He's just carving people up. He's realizing the stuff that everybody saw that he had with Pittsburgh, and he's taking it to a completely new level with Houston.
American League Rookie of the Year, I'm giving it to Brandon Lowe at the moment of the Rays. 276, 339, 523, 16 home runs. Not a stellar field in the American League, but for my money, it's kind of surprising that it's not Vlad Guerrero Jr., but I think Brandon Lowe's got to be the guy at the moment.
Yeah, you know, I would like to see him strike out a little bit less. I know it's kind of weird to be nitpicking a guy when you're talking about awards, but I always get worried that guys with high strikeouts are just going to kind of fall apart eventually. Like, they're just some sort of ticking time bomb. I guess for that reason, I would think Vladito ends up with the award at the end of the year. He's getting better as the season goes. He's not quite there yet. He doesn't have it for the first half. I would have no problem giving it to Brandon Lau. That brings up an interesting point. Is he the one with the pronunciation of low or Lau? Because the Rays have two guys who spell their last names L-O-W-E, and they pronounce them differently, and I can't keep them straight.
I don't know.
Okay, all right. Well, that's beside the point. I think he's fine for the first half pick, but
we're predicting.
Exactly. Yeah. So first half, yep, absolutely. I think at the end of the year, we're going to be talking about Vlad Jr. as the eventual AL Rookie of the Year.
All right, let's move through this last part here, shooting shotgun shells here as quick as we can here. American League Division Champions, any argument with Yankees, Twins, and Astros at this point?
No, not really. I mean, I would like to see some of these things get closer. I would like to see more of these American League teams be competitive, because there's a huge, huge gap between the top of the American League and the bottom of the American League. The worst teams in the American League are way worse than the worst teams in the National League. And I think that's playing out right now. As far as the division winners go, you could see Tampa Bay making a run at the East. I think the Yankees are just too good and they're going to hold them off. I can't really find fault. Cleveland is standing on strange ground right now. They're kind of a flawed team, and guys are getting hurt. The Twins got off to such a huge start. They might not be catchable. And Houston's just too good. They're just so good. I'm kind of amazed that they're only up by seven games. So yeah, I can't really quibble with those picks.
I had like a seven-game losing streak. That's why it's so close.
Two
wild card teams. Who are your two wild card teams at this point?
In the American League, yeah, I like Tampa Bay because they have magic. They find these guys who can just make this stuff happen somehow year after year. It's amazing.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of boring, but I think Boston's going to take the second slot too, just because there's a lot of talent on that team. Chris Sale has gotten it figured out. Mookie Betts has been hitting like Mookie Betts for a little while. They have a lot of other good supporting cast members. Some other bits of Boston rotation and bullpen give you pause, but they got hitters. That part's not really in question. I think if they get a little bit of good injury luck and maybe make an addition at the deadline, they end up pushing through and end up overtaking, you know, the likes of Cleveland and Oakland. Mm-hmm. So it's boring to have three AL East teams in there. Nobody really likes a prediction that has that many AL East teams in there, because we always see them every October anyway. But I have a hard time seeing it play out in any other way.
I was going to go with the Rays, and I was going to go with the Angels. I was looking for something outside the box, but Tommy La Stella just hit the injured list today, and he's going to be out for a few weeks.
Oh, that was brutal.
Yeah, it's a brutal loss, and with the Tyler Skaggs passing, it doesn't seem like the Angels are a good dark horse pick at this point. So I'll go with you. I'll go with the Red Sox, although I do think I have a sneaking feeling we haven't seen the last of the Rangers yet, and that they may add at the trade deadline. But I think Boston is too obvious a choice to be that second wild card team at this point. Looking at the National League, let's first tackle the Phillies. Where do you think the Phillies will finish here? Do they win the National League East? Do they get one of the two wild cards, or do they miss?
I think the Phillies are going to finish in either direction within 3 games of the Braves. But I don't know in which direction that is yet. They could win the division, I think, because Atlanta's pitching is kind of suspect right now. They have more pitching issues than the Phillies do. It's being offset by the offense. They have a lot of guys who can hit. Austin Riley's starting to come back to earth a little bit, but even around him, I mean, my goodness, you know, Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna, that's all you really need. And then they just so happen to have Nick Markakis and Albies and all those other wonderful guys. So they have the bats to keep them afloat, even amid the pitching questions. I like the Phillies' chances to add an impact player at the deadline more than I do the Braves, which I think could keep them close. And at the very least, get them better footing in the wild card race. They're only a half game up right now. They need to get a little bit better to keep a little bit of distance, because there's a lot of really talented teams that are chasing them, namely the Rockies and, oh, by the way, the Nationals, who are now only a game and a half back of them.
Yep. Yeah, no, I have I have the Braves winning the East, I have the Cubs winning the Central, and the Dodgers winning the West. Those are my division leaders, and I think you look at Fangraphs, they have the Nationals at 65.4% odds to make the playoffs. The Phillies are at 29.6%, despite the Nats coming into Thursday, a game and a half behind the Phillies. But I got to say, I think the Nationals will finish ahead of the Phillies this season. I think the Nats are going in the right direction. I don't see any momentum with the Phillies. I just don't see they have struggled to get any kind of momentum going here. So I'm putting the Nationals in as one of the two wild card teams. And at this point, the way I'm feeling, the way things are going, in my heart, I just don't feel the Phillies making the playoffs this year. This feels like a 2006 team kind of situation, and I put the Brewers in and the Nationals in as the wild card teams, and I think the Phillies get close. I think it's like 2005 and 2006 where they're like a game out, they miss out by a game or 2 games or something like that, but they just don't feel like they have the horses this year.
Well, they absolutely need to have better injury luck in the second half, and having MVP caliber Bryce Harper would be great. What we've gotten so far over the last 2 months, especially, has been fine, and I would take that every season. April, you can take or leave. Last 2 months, great. I would take that all the time. If he unlocks something else and levels up and can steal a win or two coming down the stretch, and maybe guys stay healthy and Nola stays on the pace he's been on, and maybe Arrieta finds something back in his quiver, it's a lot of ifs. And I think we've talked about this in some of our preseason talks, where you don't like relying on hope. Hope is not a good season strategy.
Yeah.
But I think there are some pieces there that you can invest a little bit of hope in. They definitely need some external help. I don't know what that looks like yet. They definitely need to supplement this roster if they want to make the playoffs. But I still like their chances to be a wild card team. I do.
Oh, sure. I do too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's talent in the National League. You obviously can't write off the Cubs, the Rockies, and even on down to the Padres and the Cardinals. The Cardinals are always in it, it seems like. Yeah. But they need help, and the Phillies are not going to be able to do this, I don't think, with their current roster.
Well, it'll be an interesting second half. I sure hope I'm wrong, and I think it is. I think they are going to be in the mix the entire second half. And make sure that you are following us at The Good Fight for every bit of Phillies news and all the game recaps, everything we have going on, all the analysis at thegoodfight.com. Check out all of Paul's work there. Follow him on Twitter at Paul_Boyer and also at The Good Fight. Paul, thanks so much for coming back on Hitting Season, man. I appreciate it.
Happy 300, Johnny!
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that, man. Well, one last thing before we get out of here. And, you know, this is obviously not a fun thing to talk about. Odubel Herrera's court case, an update for you guys who haven't been aware, maybe living under a rock and not aware of what's been going on with Odubel Herrera's domestic violence court case. Prosecutors had to drop the case on Thursday because Herrera's girlfriend has decided not to pursue charges and was not cooperating with the investigation. So Odubel Herrera is no longer in any legal trouble. However, that could still mean that he gets suspended by Major League Baseball. We've seen that with players, with other players in the past, Addison Russell being the clearest example, where he was accused of hitting his girlfriend. His girlfriend dropped the charges, and so he did not face any legal action, but he was still suspended by Major League Baseball. But the Cubs ended up keeping him around and decided they want to try and rehabilitate him while he was still on the team. The Phillies, I think, will probably handle it a little bit differently. I think it's likely the Phillies will try to trade him if they can find a buyer. If I'm a major league team, I'm not buying Odubel Herrera, and I'm waiting to see if the Phillies release him. And I just think, even though he wasn't found guilty, even though he didn't face any kind of actual charges, the legal case had to be dissolved, the police report is out there, man. The police report states pretty clearly what he did, what happened in that hotel room. And he has to undergo counseling, which is great. I hope he gets it. And I hope he improves. I hope he becomes a better person out of this, but I don't think it should be in a Phillies uniform. The police report laid out pretty clearly what happened in that casino, in that hotel room. And, you know, I don't want Odubel Herrera on this baseball team anymore. And, you know, you could say, well, it'd be a harder decision if he was playing better. It might be tougher knowing that, you know, you'd be losing a star player. But regardless of whether he was a star player or not, I think most Phillies fans would agree that you have to cut ties with Odubel Herrera. And I know some of you listening will think that because the court case was dropped that the Phillies should bring him back. You're entitled to that opinion. I have a different opinion on this. I think the police report is pretty clear in stating what happened, and the Phillies don't have to keep somebody like that around. And I don't think they should. And I don't think they will. But it remains to be seen. We'll be watching this pretty closely and see what happens here over the next few weeks and months, depending on the Phillies will probably get a little bit of a breather, a delay before they have to make a decision, because there probably will be a suspension by Major League Baseball. All right, here is your stat of the week. Bryce Harper's home run in the game against the Atlanta Braves on Tuesday was his 16th of the season. It was also the 200th of his career. Not only that, it was his 1,000th career hit. Never has a player in Major League history reached a milestone hit and home run on the same hit. Very cool moment for Bryce Harper in a losing effort on Thursday against the Atlanta Braves. Folks, that'll do it for episode number 300 of the podcast. My thanks to Kevin Negandhi and Paul Boyer for being guests on this very special episode. And again, thank you to the listeners of Hit and Season and the Good Fight podcast feed for making this a twice-weekly destination for you guys. And I really appreciate all the support, all the encouragement I've gotten from everyone online on Twitter. It really does mean a lot. And here's to 300 more Phil's podcasts. Just saying that out loud makes me wonder, gee, what am I going to be doing with my life three years from now? But hopefully we'll be celebrating episode number 600 3 years from now, and maybe a Phil's championship also between now and then. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.